Will you help support the scientists working to disseminate the evidence about intelligent design in nature? Go to evolutionnews.org and donate now to support Evolution News and our other initiatives in the coming year. 10 years ago today, an activist federal judge in Pennsylvania tried to kill intelligent design by court order. In Kitzmiller v. Dover, Judge John Jones declared that teaching about intelligent design was unconstitutional because intelligent design was religion rather than science. Contrary to what Darwinists thought would happen, it wasn't over after Dover. Thanks to the support from independent-minded thinkers like you, intelligent design did not die after Dover. Instead, we produce new books and films advancing the argument and have helped to fund and support the work of scientists and scholars researching the evidence for intelligent design. We in the intelligent design movement don't depend on tax dollars. We do depend on voluntary help from people like you. As we progress toward the 20th anniversary of the Center for Science and Culture next year, we are preparing a stream of new books, scientific research, documentaries, and more to push the debate forward. But we can't bring these things to completion without your support. Will you take a stand against censors like Judge Jones and help us continue and expand the debate over intelligent design in 2016? Please donate now to support the work of intelligent design. Go to evolutionnews.org and donate now. That's evolutionnews.org.
Welcome to ID the Future. I'm Sarah Chaffee with the Center for Science and Culture. Nearly 10 years ago, on December 20th, 2005, Judge John E. Jones ruled in Kitzmiller v. Dover that intelligent design is religion and not science. His decision was based on faulty reasoning and misrepresentation of intelligent design. As we approach the 10-year anniversary of Dover, listen to a recent lecture by Casey Luskin, who covered the trial for Evolution News in his role as then Science Education Policy Program Officer. Here in Part 2, he discusses whether intelligent design requires a supernatural creator.
Here's the definition of science that Judge Jones gave. It's a 6-part test that he applied to find that ID is not science. So again, this is a major reason why we don't want judges defining science. And we'll look at this definition of science that Judge Jones used in some detail, and we'll talk about how each of the 6 criteria in this test for whether something is science were either irrelevant or he got his analysis wrong when he was analyzing whether ID is science. So number one, Judge Jones says that ID violates the centuries-old ground rules of science by invoking and permitting supernatural causation. 2, the argument of irreducible complexity central to ID employs the same flawed and illogical contrived dualism that doomed creation science in the 1980s. And 3, ID's negative attacks on evolution have been refuted by the scientific community. And he went on to make 3 other criteria. He said, this is number 4, ID has failed to gain acceptance in the scientific community. Number 5, it has not generated peer-reviewed publications. Nor 6, has it been the subject of research and testing. We'll go through each of these and talk about, first of all, whether they're even relevant to deciding whether ID is science. And then second, whether or not Judge Jones's analysis on each of these 6 items was wrong. And we'll find that in each case, each criterion is either false or irrelevant or both to determining whether ID is science. So this was very poor analysis on Judge Jones's part. This is why we don't want judges going into these broad, sweeping analyses trying to define science. So A, ID in the supernatural. Well, Judge Jones said in his ruling that ID violates the centuries-old ground rules of science by invoking and permitting supernatural causation, okay? And just in case you didn't get it, he said this in multiple other places. He said ID's religious nature is evident because it involves a supernatural designer. He even went further and said ID requires supernatural creation. I mean, he said ID requires supernatural creation. So is this true that ID requires supernatural creation? Well, I think there's lots of evidence that it does not, but as a first piece of evidence, let's look at the Pandas and People textbook that was referenced in Dover's oral disclaimer that was a big part of this case. That textbook actually says that scientists fail to distinguish between intelligence, which can be recognized by uniform sensory experience, and the supernatural, which cannot. So what is this textbook saying? What it's saying is that the supernatural cannot be recognized by the uniform sensory experience that's at the heart of science. What it's saying is that science cannot appeal to the supernatural, that our uniform sensory experience, the standard methods of science that we use, cannot get us to a conclusion about the supernatural. We'll see more examples of how the Panis textbook said this in just a moment. So what the textbook said is that we can use science to infer intelligent causes, but we cannot use science to infer the supernatural. So obviously this textbook is promoting intelligent design, and if you read on in this textbook, it makes it very clear that we cannot, through the methods of science, infer that the intelligent cause responsible for life was a supernatural cause. And it actually says explicitly that science cannot study the supernatural. So I think the Dover textbook actually respects the so-called rule that Judge Jones says is at the ground rule of science, that we cannot invoke the supernatural. Of course, that rule is also known as methodological naturalism. It's the idea that we can only invoke naturalistic, non-supernatural causes when we are doing scientific investigation. Whether or not that rule is valid and whether or not that rule is a good rule for science, it's pretty clear that ID does not violate that rule and that the textbook, the ID textbook at the heart of this case, also did not violate methodological naturalism. It explicitly says we cannot study the supernatural through science. Look at another example where the Dover textbook says this. It says, appeals to intelligent design may be considered in science, as illustrated by current NASA search for extraterrestrial intelligence, SETI. Archaeology has pioneered the development of methods for distinguishing the effects of natural and intelligent causes. We should recognize, however, that if we go further and conclude that the intelligence responsible for biological origins is outside the universe, supernatural, or within it, we do so without the help of science. So what this quote from the Panis textbook is saying is that intelligent design only appeals to an intelligent cause. And if we go further and conclude that that intelligence is supernatural or natural, we're going beyond what we can learn through science. And so as a result, the Panis textbook, and this is consistent with what ID proponents have been saying in pretty much all of their major writings for a long time, all intelligent design as a theory appeals to is an intelligent cause. We don't go beyond that and try to determine whether or not that cause is supernatural or natural, because that goes beyond what we can learn through a scientific investigation. Now, Judge Jones ignored these quotes from the Panis textbook, but he did actually quote the Panis textbook in one place. Here's what he said. He said, an explicit concession that the intelligent designer works outside the laws of nature and science and a direct reference to religion is Panda's rhetorical statement, what kind of intelligent agent was it, the designer? An answer, on its own, science cannot answer this question. It must leave it to religion and philosophy. Now, it turns out that there's actually a much longer part of this quote that Judge Jones ignored. So let's look at the full quote from Panis, the actual quote, to see what the textbook is really saying. Is the textbook really saying that we're going to invoke religion, we're going to say that the designer is supernatural, and that it's not a natural cause? What does the textbook actually say? Here's the full quote that Judge Jones didn't give in the ruling. The actual quote says, if science is based upon experience, then science tells us the message encoded in DNA must have originated from an intelligent cause. But what kind of an intelligent agent was it? On its own, science cannot answer this question. It must leave it to religion and philosophy. But that should not prevent science from acknowledging evidences for an intelligent cause origin wherever they may exist. So rather than invoking religion and saying that the intelligent cause is supernatural, Panis quite explicitly leaves it at just an intelligent cause. That is as far as the Panis textbook goes when it talks about, you know, the nature of the designer. It says that there is an intelligent cause, and it explicitly doesn't get into the question of whether or not that designer is natural or supernatural. So yeah, religion and philosophy will have to answer that question, but the Panis textbook isn't trying to answer that question. It's not trying to get into religion and philosophy. All the Panis textbook does is invoke and infer an intelligent cause. And it says, look, science can detect an intelligent cause wherever they may exist. But that's all it can do. And as we saw in the other quotes, it says, if you go further and appeal to a supernatural intelligence or a natural one, now you're going beyond what the data from biology can tell us. And you know, this is not some kind of a strategy, a legal strategy, or we're not being coy here. Think about the way intelligent design works. Let's say, for the sake of argument, that the information that encodes the bacterial flagellum in the DNA, that points to an intelligent cause, okay? We have this digital language-based code that's encoding an irreducibly complex rotary engine. I mean, that's a great argument for an intelligent designer that's needed to produce that information. But that information in the DNA, it doesn't say made by Yahweh or made by Allah or made by Buddha or made by Yoda or made by whoever you think the designer is. All that information is it's a language-based digital code that encodes an irreducibly complex molecular machine, a rotary engine. That's a great argument for an intelligent cause that's needed. But if you go further and try to say, okay, well, the intelligent cause that made this information in this machine is the supernatural God of the Bible, or it's Zortan from planet Xenu. If you're saying that, you're going beyond what we can learn through a scientific investigation. So intelligent design tries to respect the limits of science. It tries to not go beyond what we can learn from the scientific evidence alone. And all the data is here is a digital language-based code in the DNA in a molecular machine. That information alone is only enough to tell us that there was an intelligent cause origin. And just like Panda said, if we go beyond that and say that, okay, this designer here that made this was supernatural or natural, we're going beyond what we can learn through the scientific evidence. So as a result, intelligent design, out of a desire to respect the limits of science, doesn't get into those larger religious questions about who the designer was. It limits its conclusions to an intelligent cause. And of course, ID theorists, by and large, are very open about who they believe the designer is or what their own personal religious beliefs are about the designer. We'll see in just a moment that Michael Behe was very open, even during the Dover trial, that he believes the designer is God. But he makes it clear that that's his own personal religious belief, not a conclusion of intelligent design. So the point here is the Panda's textbook nowhere attempts to answer the question of who the designer is. So when Judge Jones claims that Panda's statement is trying to actually invoke religion to appeal to a supernatural creator, he's simply putting words in Panda's mouth that it doesn't state. And Judge Jones's misquote of Panda's is quite bad. If he had quoted the actual quotes from Panda's, it would have been very clear that Panda's nowhere attempts to address or answer the question of what is the identity of the designer? Is the designer supernatural or not? It does not try to address those questions. Instead, what Judge Jones did to try to claim that Panda's was really creationism in disguise is he looked at these pre-publication drafts of Panda's. Now, these were drafts of this textbook that had been written in the early to mid-1980s, some 20 years before the Dover case even came about. Nobody even knew that these drafts existed. But Judge Jones said that somehow these drafts that had been locked up in banker's boxes for 20 years that nobody had ever seen, that somehow they would have showed a reasonable observer in the Dover school district that ID is creationism. And the claim that was made was that the early drafts of the Panda's textbook used creationist terminology. And that after the Edwards versus Aguillard ruling that struck down creationism, they changed the terminology and started using intelligent design terminology out of a legal strategy to evade this ruling. That was sort of the narrative that was being told. Well, what's interesting is that when we look at the pre-publication drafts of Panda's, yes, sometimes they did use creation-type terminology. But when they used that terminology, they used it in a different way from the way that creationists used that terminology. As a matter of fact, they would say things that made it explicitly clear that they were not getting into religious questions about the supernatural. Let me give you an example from a pre-publication draft of Panda's. Here's a quote. It says, "This is not merely the design or clockmaker argument of William Paley, which was long ago abandoned by scientists. There are two important differences. First, Paley's argument was to extrapolate to the supernatural from the clock. The problem was that biology provided no examples of the supernatural manipulating the material, and thus there was no basis in uniform experience for going from nature to the supernatural, from inferring an unobserved supernatural caused from an observed effect." Okay? So what is this saying? What it's saying is actually very consistent with the published version of the Panda's textbook. What it's saying is that we cannot go from simple biological data, you know, information in DNA, et cetera, we can't go from that to the supernatural because we don't have any experience with the supernatural manipulating the material. All we can infer is an intelligent cause. So when Panda's uses sort of creation terminology, the argument it's making is clearly different from creationism, where creationism always appeals to a supernatural creator. Here's another interesting quote. I'll read the quote in the red box at the bottom of the slide. It says, "Some master," and I'll read the whole slide. The second difference is that unlike Paley's day, we have scientific tools and terminology to distinguish between order and information and to quantify the latter, whether encountered on the pages of a book, in the face of a mountain, or in biology. Thus, from the observation that human intelligence can communicate by manipulating sequences of alphabetic letters, creationists infer that a similar kind of intelligence was responsible for the message sequence of nucleotide letters in DNA. Some master intellect is the creator of life, but such observable instances of information cannot tell us if the intellect behind them is natural or supernatural. This is not a question science can answer. So this is a great example of what we're talking about here. This is a pre-publication draft that uses this creationist terminology, saying creationists infer that similar kind of intelligence was involved and talking about a creator of life, okay? But then it goes on to say that the information in life, quote, cannot tell us if the intellect behind them is natural or supernatural. That's very different from what you would have been hearing creationists saying back in the 1980s. Creationists always appeal to the supernatural. And in fact, this is why in the Edwards versus Aguillard ruling, which happened in 1987, the US Supreme Court found that a supernatural creator is a religious view and that creationism is unconstitutional because it postulates a supernatural creator. Creationism always postulates some kind of a supernatural creator, yet here we have creationist terminology being used alongside the claim that we cannot tell if the intellect behind life is natural or supernatural. This is not a question that science can answer. So the substance of what these pre-publication drafts of pandas is saying is very different from the typical thing you would hear a creationist say. In fact, it's different in a way that is legally important because it shows that ID is really lacking this very quality of appealing to a supernatural creator that caused creationism to be declared unconstitutional. Let's look at one more quote from a pre-publication draft. It says, the point of clarification to be made is this. We can know from uniform sensory experience and thus from science about the material world. But there are two things about which we cannot learn through uniform sensory experience. One is the supernatural, and so to teach it in science classes would be out of place. The other thing we cannot learn through uniform sensory experience is that there is no supernatural, i.e. that natural causes identified through sensory experience exhaust reality. We cannot detect evidence for philosophical naturalism. To teach either of these two, even by the presumption of excluding the other, is to yield the classroom to apologetics, either the apologetics of theism or the apologetics of philosophical naturalism. Thus, science can identify an intellect, but is powerless to tell us if that intellect is within the universe or beyond it. So Judge Jones ignored all these quotes from the pre-publication drafts of pandas. If he had quoted these, it would have been very clear that even these pre-publication drafts made it clear that the textbook was not getting into the fundamental question of whether there is a supernatural or not. The basic project that pandas had in mind was fundamentally different from the creationist project that was so common in the 1980s. And so I think this is very significant. Judge Jones claimed that this creationist terminology showed that pandas was actually trying to promote creationism, and they changed the terminology to hide it. But the reality is the terminology was not changed because they were trying to hide what they were doing was creationism. No, it's because what they were doing was substantively different from creationism, and they needed new terminology to make that clear. And if you want to understand how we can see that, look no further than the deposition testimony of Charles Thaxton. He was the academic editor for the Pandas and People textbook. He's a chemist. He was involved in the writing of the Pandas textbook, and he was involved in the creation of these pre-publication drafts of pandas back in the 1980s. He wasn't called to testify during the actual Dover trial, but he was deposed by the ACLU's attorneys before the case. And he was asked, why did you guys change the terminology in the pre-publication drafts from creationist terminology to intelligent design terminology? And here's what he said. He said, I wasn't comfortable with the typical vocabulary that for the most part creationists were using because it didn't express what I was trying to do. They were wanting to bring God into the discussion, and I was wanting to stay within the empirical domain and do what you can legitimately do there. So what Dr. Thaxton is saying here is creationism was doing something he didn't want to do. They were always getting into God and the supernatural and religion, and he wanted to construct a strictly scientific, a strictly empirically based argument for design without getting into all that religious baggage. And so he wasn't comfortable, he says, with the typical vocabulary that creationists were using. He wanted to find new terminology. And you can look at what Thaxton has said elsewhere. We actually have a great podcast with Dr. Thaxton where he talks about that he learned of the term intelligent design from a NASA engineer that he heard talking. And he thought, that's the kind of language I need. I need new language to distinguish my project from the creationist project. So Panda's terminology was changed, not to hide the fact that ID is creationism, because ID isn't creationism. It was to make it clear that ID is different from creationism. So the question often comes up, why was Pandas using this creationist terminology to begin with if its project was different from creationism? Well, think about it. This book was written in the early 80s originally. And, you know, all these drafts of this textbook were being written in the early to mid 1980s. At this time, creationism was sort of the only game in town when it came to non-evolutionary views. It was the only thing that existed. And so that was the terminology that everybody knew about. And so when they started to write this book, they sort of just naturally adopted the terminology that was out there in the culture. It was in the air at the time. But as they got going with their project, they realized, you know what? What we're doing is actually different from creationism. Well, let's go back to the Thaxton quote. Creationism is always trying to bring God and the supernatural into the discussion. And they decided they wanted to do something different to stay within the empirical domain and to not get into this religious stuff. And so they realized that they needed a new terminology, new vocabulary to distinguish their project from creationism. That is why the terminology was changed in the pre-publication drafts. And you can see that even in the pre-Edwards versus Aguilar drafts, that even pre-Edwards, before the Supreme Court struck down creationism, they already were saying, look, you can't get to the supernatural from science alone. So that alone shows that what they were doing was different from what caused creationism to be struck down in the Edwards case for postulating a supernatural creator. So Judge Jones had clear evidence in the trial record that ID does not require or invoke supernatural creation. And in fact, Scott Minnick, one of the pro-ID scientists, he's a pro-ID microbiologist, he testified during the Dover trial. He was asked, do you have an opinion as to whether intelligent design requires the action of a supernatural creator? He said, I do. What is that opinion? It does not. Michael Behe wrote in a paper that we cited to him in one of our amicus briefs. He says, as regards the identity of the designer, modern ID theory happily echoes Isaac Newton's phrase, hypothesis non fingo. And hypothesis non fingo means I don't make any hypothesis. I don't feign any hypothesis. It's sort of like saying, look, I'm not trying to make a hypothesis about something that science cannot address. So ID does not address the identity of the designer. Behe testified very much the same during the Dover trial. He was asked, so is it accurate for people to claim or to represent that intelligent design holds that the designer was God? Behe says, no, that is completely inaccurate. Okay, he's asked, well, people have asked you your opinion as to who you believe the designer is. Is that correct? Behe answers, that is right. And then he's asked, has science answered that question? And he answers, no, science has not done so. And he's asked, and I believe that you have answered on occasion that you believe the designer is God. Is that correct? And Behe says, yes, that's correct. And then he asks, are you making a scientific claim of that answer? And he says, no, I conclude that based on theological and philosophical and historical factors. So ID proponents, this is very consistent with how ID proponents have addressed the question of the identity of the designer. Michael Behe in this testimony is very clear. Yes, he says, I do believe the designer is God, but he's making it also clear that he's not saying that that's a scientific claim, that he concludes that based upon theology, philosophy, history, and other fields that are outside the realm of science. So intelligent design as a scientific theory does not try to address the identity of the designer. It only appeals to an intelligent cause. Many ID proponents might have their own views about who the designer is, but that's their own personal religious beliefs. They don't conclude that based upon the theory of intelligent design. And in fact, intelligent design includes people who are not religious. There are non-religious ID proponents. So how could ID have some kind of a claim about the identity of the designer if its proponents don't have an agreement on who the designer is? There are ID proponents who don't even believe in God. So to me, that shows you that ID cannot postulate that there is a divine supernatural creator if there is no consensus among ID proponents about who the designer is. Okay, so going back to Edwards. In the Edwards versus Aguilar ruling, it said the key rule from Edwards, the idea that a supernatural creator was responsible for the creation of humankind, is a religious belief. That is the key rule from Edwards. Supernatural creator is a religious belief. But does ID require supernatural causation? Well, according to the testimony given to Judge Jones in this case, it does not. Both the pro-ID expert witnesses, Michael Behe and Scott Minnick, said no, ID does not require supernatural causation. Other documents that were quoted to Judge Jones made that very clear. Unfortunately, Judge Jones misrepresented intelligent design in the ruling, and he just ignored what pro-ID expert witnesses testified before him in his own courtroom. He did this so he could force, or try to force at least, the square peg of intelligent design into the round hole of creationism. But the reality is that ID lacks this key quality that caused creationism to be declared religion by the U.S. Supreme Court in Edwards versus Aguilar. ID only appeals to an intelligent cause. It tries to respect the limits of science, so it doesn't address whether that cause is natural or supernatural. And as a result, ID lacks this key characteristic of appealing to a supernatural creator that caused creationism to be struck down as a religious view. And so you cannot fit this square peg of intelligent design into the round hole of creationism. Again, ID lacks the key characteristic that caused creationism to be declared unconstitutional, and Judge Jones basically ignored the definition of intelligent design given by pro-ID expert witnesses in his courtroom, and he misdefined intelligent design in his ruling.
That was Casey Luskin, lecturing on whether intelligent design requires a supernatural creator, and the Kitzmiller v. Dover ruling. In the decades since Dover, intelligent design has flourished. For a free, short documentary on intelligent design, and a free digital book about the Dover trial, as well as other resources, visit informationenigma.com. That's informationenigma.com. I'm Sarah Chaffee, for the Center for Science and Culture. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2015. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.